Auto Press episode, do you know, JP?
37.
37.
A year after you were born.
One more than my age.
One more than your age.
Only for about a month and a half.
Dang.
Anyway, just wrapped up a...
You just revealed to me that you're going to see B. Hughes on Friday. That's, and I'm pretty excited.
Friday the 13th.
Wow.
10:30.
10:30.
Man, be used. I'm gonna hit it so far.
What time zone would that would make that 4:30?
I think you'd have to go maybe over to England.
Nice.
So, yeah, we got that coming up on Friday. But tonight we have a had a fun interview with Wade Benfield, who has been a pro for 10 years.
A very interesting road to it too.
Yeah, didn't start playing until he's 17, and we got into a little bit of that, how amazingly you don't have to play one sport from the time you're 6 years old to be good at something.
Yeah, and you don't have to go play D1 high level golf either.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, played at Clayton State
and started at Barry.
Started at Barry College with Gainesville's own Brian Fair as the coach. But anyway, that was a fun little interview, but that'll be coming up in just a few minutes. We don't want to give too much away.
I texted Brian earlier to tell him Wade was coming on, and I don't think Brian understands what a podcast is because he's
talking about Brian Fair.
Yeah, he said, "What time and where do I listen tonight?" Like, he thought it was just a radio show.
Tell him you'll send it to him.
Yeah.
Anyway, the PGA Tour golf season actually kicks back off after 2 whole weeks off.
Yeah, great off season.
Yeah. So, but they're up at the Greenbrier.
That's going to be Todd's in the field. Don's in the field.
I've only got one pick this week, and it's B. Todd.
I think there's 21 rookies playing.
Yeah. I texted Brendan a couple weeks ago about something, and I said, "Man, you get a whole week off for the off season." He said, "Yeah, but at least I get to go while I'm hot."
Yeah, that's true.
So,
I'd want to play right now. What are all the Corn Ferry guys going to do? We should have asked. I mean,
well, we talked to Wade. He's doing some Mondays.
A couple of Mondays, but he might not play till the end of January.
Yeah, it's interesting with the schedule. You're right. They don't play. They have nothing until January.
I wonder if he's got a Q school just to do it.
Why would you do that?
$50,000 first place fries.
And paid however much? Five. I mean, his status ain't going to get any better.
No, that's true.
Oh, golly. I don't know why I'm about to bring this up, but did you see a cargo ship actually flipped over? I thought about you in St. Simons.
They saved everybody.
I know, but I thought about how bad is that? That you got pictures of a cargo ship flipping over. If you're new to the podcast or a container ship, JP got on this kick there for about a month where he claimed that Tiger wouldn't drive him, would ride all the way to the entrance and then would get out and drive himself in so it looked like he drove.
Yep.
Like a cargo or container ship where they get all the way in there and then somebody
port pilot.
And somebody pulls him in.
Mm-hmm.
So JP thought Tiger and Phil Mickelson and all those guys were like port pilots.
Yeah. I still think it.
And it's just amazing that happened. And that's the first thing I thought of.
I know.
Was you.
I don't know how they're going to get that boat out of there. That thing's crazy.
Anyway, we're way off topic. Yeah. But
Greenbrier, my pick, Scott Stallings.
There you go. Won there before.
Won there before.
Not Dom?
Well, Dom's a given.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's understood.
Yeah. At this point, Dom's understood. He needs to play well. Conditional status. But the Greenbrier, and then that kicks off a real good fall season here. A couple new events, I think.
I looked at it today. They go Greenbrier, Jackson, Mississippi, Napa, Vegas, Houston.
Yeah, so not new events, but new to this schedule.
Yeah, Greenbrier's completely in a new spot.
I didn't know what to do this past Sunday without golf. It was weird.
You watch the NFL?
And European Tour. Oh, speaking of that, have you not even seen what your boy did this week?
Yeah.
We don't want to talk about that. That's covered by everybody. He was just
removing
loose impediments.
Did everybody forget about Stuart Sink doing that in Hilton Head years ago? He did it in a playoff. I mean, he basically was like he just drew a line behind his ball.
Little island.
That was actually probably the least amount of of squirrely stuff he's done this year with the rules. I mean, that wasn't a penalty, was it?
Paul Casey running the ball over a bug, and they had to review that.
What was that about?
I don't know.
Rules of golf are just, I mean, we could have a podcast just about stupid decisions in the rules of golf.
But yeah, cool. Well, we don't want to do too much. I mean, maybe we'll talk more next week about pro golf, but let's just let him get right into the Wade interview.
Yep. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome everybody. We're joined here with a special guest, Wade Benfield. Wade is a Korn Ferry Tour member. This year he finished top 60 on the money list. I think it was 55th. Is that correct, Wade?
Somewhere around there. I kind of lost track after Portland.
All the stuff with the finals kind of get thrown out. But Wade's lives here in Atlanta. Went to Clayton State. Connected to us through a friend of mine, Lee Caudell from The Orchard, who we've mentioned quite a bit on the podcast. And Wade's taking a little bit of time away from watching the Braves game. So, Wade, thanks for joining us here.
Absolutely, fellas. Thanks for having me on tonight.
So let's start at where I think you're probably pretty happy. The first time since, 2011, you have not had to go to Q school?
Yes. Yes.
That's got to be a good feeling.
It is. It is. So just kind of to piggyback on that real quick, I missed a cut in Evansville, and my caddy kind of looked at me and he goes, you know what, heck of a year, and guess where we don't have to go in a couple of weeks? First stage of Q school. So that kind of makes it all a little bit better. But this time of year I'd normally be getting ready to go down to Callaway Gardens. So kind of happy to just be relaxing with a little time off.
So, I mean, in quite a journey, I mean, from everything we can gather online, about your 10th year as a pro, is that right?
Yes. Turned pro in October of 2010 and played maybe one or two events and then kind of played half a year in 11. So, yeah, almost 10 years, I guess.
So, well, let's go back to the beginning. Everything I was looking online, you played about every sport growing up and were pretty good at a lot of them. How did you get into golf? What was kind of your experience with that?
Sure. So, my father and my grandfather both played. My dad still does. He's in Ireland right now on a golf trip with some buddies. But, I played all the other three major sports growing up. So golf was something that me and a couple of buddies of mine did in the summer just to get away from baseball. We play a lot of baseball in the summer with all-star teams and travel ball. So we would just go to the golf course randomly on a day that we didn't have practice and go shoot our 100 and have a bunch of fun. And then we moved to the south side of town down in Peachtree City in 99. I was 12, and we joined the clubs down here, and there's four of them that we can play. So I went from spending every day at the baseball park in the summertime to getting dropped off at the golf course and then picked back up after one of my folks got finished with work. So that's kind of how I transitioned into it. And then I decided I wanted to get serious with it at 17 and started playing on the high school team and quit playing baseball.
So you can actually play other sports growing up and still be good at golf.
Still play pro golf.
Still play pro golf.
Yeah, I mean, crazy idea, isn't it?
It's insane. I mean, that you could not really dig into it till 17 and here you are, you know, 10 years as a pro. I think that's great for people to hear.
It's refreshing, that's for sure. You see all these kids nowadays are like U.S. kids and getting out there when they're 9 years old with only one sport now.
Yeah, I see it a lot, and I'll play in some pro-ams with some fellows, and they have sons or daughters that are in golf, and I always just tell them, you know, just let them do what they want to do. If they want to play soccer, if they want to do volleyball, if they want to do basketball or baseball or football or anything, like, I feel like the way that I did it just for me was the best way simply because my body changed a lot. I hit a growth spurt late in high school and grew a couple inches one summer. And if I would have swung the golf club, been trained and had all this coaching when I was 12, who knows how I would have handled that growing so fast, you know, over that one summer. So it just kind of, for me, I've always been a little bit of a late bloomer in that essence, but, I wouldn't trade any of those days for the world. And I think you learn lessons in team sports that can translate to an individual sport like golf too. So I always tell people, you know, if that's my piece of advice, is to just let their kids play all the sports they want.
So let's try to kind of trace your route there. So you get serious about golf in 17, and then you went to Georgia Military College for years.
I got to stop you right there. He went to Barry and played for Brian Fair.
I went to Barry.
Oh, okay. Yep. You played with Brian Fair from
Brian's from Gainesville.
Gainesville.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I had to stop Stu there.
No worries. Yeah, I played at Barry for a year and then left Barry and came home and just took a year off college golf and went to school here locally and then got an opportunity at Clayton State to play for Barry Harwell and I jumped at it. It was a really good opportunity for me to get a lot better.
What is it about Clayton State and like people going to a bunch of colleges before? Because like Willie Wilcox, you mentioned off air, was a teammate of yours. He had an interesting college route too, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He started at UAB and then came to us at Clayton State. He actually got there the year before I did. So, we had a college golf coach that took the job at Clayton State who played at Alabama and he was pretty familiar and, he was able to get some really good local players and we had a pretty good solid squad there for a couple years.
Now, I mean, what kind, it looked like looking at the results from college. I mean, you went from, it said averaging 81. I don't know if that was
that
maybe
was at Barry.
At Barry.
Only three events.
Yeah. Right. That's a small sample size, but you go from averaging 81 your first year to your senior year at Clayton State, you're the conference champion. I mean, that's some pretty impressive improvement. What was kind of your routine back in those days, or how do you think you improved so much?
Well, I think I was really naive about how to actually play golf. Like I could go hit an 8-iron, right? But I didn't really actually understand how to play golf and like work my way around a golf course. I was a pretty good putter, would spray it a little bit off the tee. So I really kind of had to work hard at just trying to, it turned into just breaking 75. And I realized that that's what my job on the team was. It was not to go shoot 66 every round. My job was to be, you know, the consistent guy. And my 74s and 73s, all of a sudden, you know, I turned my 79s into 74s. And then my 74s started turning into 72s, 170s. And then, you know, got really hot in the conference championship that one year and held on to it.
Is that what resulted? I saw you were an All-American one year. Was that the same year?
I believe so. Yes, that was my junior year at Clayton. Okay. Yeah, same year.
Gotcha.
I had a second place finish in Valdosta, Kinderlew Forest, lost by a shot, and then had another really good finish, and then ended up winning conference. So it was kind of a really good culmination, and it was a good solid year there.
So how do 2010, you had the Hooters Tour and Tar Heel Tour probably still rocking along.
They had that Peach State.
State Golf Tour. What all kind of did you play? How did you support yourself? Did you always know you were going to turn pro? I should ask that too.
Yes, I wanted to. It was something that I'd wanted to do. Obviously pretty green. Nobody in my family had any experience with professional golf other than going to the Masters or watching it on TV or what have you. So, now my folks volunteer at the Tour Championship and all that stuff. So it's, we've really kind of migrated from sport to sport, but, I'd always wanted to turn pro. It's something that I wanted to at least give a shot at. And I turned pro after I won the club championship down here. And the first tournament I played in was an Open Golf Atlanta. at Town Lake Hills up in Woodstock and finished tied for second with Brendan Todd.
Dang. That's Stuart's brother-in-law.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's been on here like three times.
Yeah. So I finished T2 with BT, and I'm like, okay, I can play a little bit. And but you know, obviously, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. It's a one-day tournament. But I played. So I was working in the golf shop, and I played like a half schedule the next year working in the golf shop. You know, it was one of those deals where I had to pick a couple of tournaments that I wanted to play maybe two a month, three every 2 months. And then I was working in the golf shop the rest of the time and was able to get some support, you know, on a small scale from some local fellows to help me out and at least get me started. And I was able to turn a little bit of cash into like 25 G's that year. I won a tournament to pay for Q school. So like I was able to do it, and I kind of proved to myself that I could, you know, make a little bit of scratch in the game and figure out how to get to that next level. So that was kind of what proved it to myself.
Was that a Hooters or a Tar Heel event that you win?
That was a Peach State event.
Okay.
Auburn University Club.
Okay. And how much did you win for that? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was $7,000.
Really? So that's a pretty good size field though for those at the time, right?
Two-day tournament, $7,000. I was like, man, I just paid for Q school.
Yeah.
Perfect. When was the time? I mean, just kind of going through your profile, you mentioned working in the shop. What about the substitute teaching? How did that happen?
I was doing that too. So I ended up, I went to a Catholic high school down here on the south side of Atlanta. And a couple of the faculty members had always joked that, you know, there would be a teaching position open if I ever wanted to do it. And I was like, well, I don't really know if I want to do the full time. And this is before I'd even gone to college. Like I was graduating high school at this point. And so I graduated from college. I was doing the pro mini tour thing. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to call up there and see if there's any like substitute teaching. Like, what do I need to do? So I like went in and met with them. Went and got certified to do it. And then like 3 days later, they throw me in this classroom and I'm substitute teaching this English lit class. And that's the most nervous I've ever been in my entire life.
did you actually do anything, or did you just like proctor the class?
The first year it was not a lot of doing anything. I was a warm body in there watching movies. Like they're doing book work, and you know, that's what every high school kid wants to do is book work.
Yeah. So
there are some hairy days and some really good ones, but no, it was a lot of fun. I ended up doing it for 4 years.
Yeah.
It turned out to be a great winter job.
On your journey through all this pro golf, did you ever consider like going into teaching?
Yeah. I could see myself, I could have seen myself teaching and coaching for sure. Probably. And at the high school level, I think my patience, you know, it's pretty good, but I don't know if I could tolerate, you know, elementary school or even middle school for that matter. Just, you know, I enjoyed the high school setting. You're not, theoretically, you're not babysitting every day.
I said not full-time babysitting.
Yeah.
You can have some interaction with people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's where more of the, you know, you're teaching not just stuff out of a chapter in a history book either. Like you're actually able to communicate lessons and things like life lessons and teaching moments and stuff like that. So that was the most fulfilling part of it for me.
That's definitely a good mini tour story that you're paying entry fees with substitute teaching checks.
Yeah. Hey, Corn Ferry loves that one, man. they put out a video at the BMW this year where they were doing some live on the range segment. And Kevin asked me, he's like, hey, so, you know, how would you equate this to like substitute teaching? I was like, well, I guess if my amateur gets out of line, I'll have to like put him in detention or something. You know, I didn't know what to say back. But yeah, they like that story.
So you do that 4 years and are you working in the golf shop some too as well in that time?
A little bit. Yeah. The best part about the substitute teaching gig is if I had something planned, I could always say no.
Yeah.
But, you know, they call you at 6 a.m. So, I mean, you're kind of awake, but Yeah, I mean, I always had the opportunity to say no, or hey, I can't do it, or yeah, absolutely, I'll see you at 7:30.
So did you quit doing that? So I guess you went to Q school all those years. When did you first get? Because I saw where you had some status on the McKinsey tour. It looked like for 3 or 4 years before this year.
Right.
How did your kind of journey through Q school go, and how'd you end up on the McKinsey tour?
I went to Q school the first time in 2011, made it through pre-Q, missed that first stage. And then in 12, I think I missed finals I made it through first stage. That was the 11 was the only year I didn't get through first.
Okay.
And then 12 through 17, I missed that second.
Oh, wow.
A couple of those years, it was by a shot. A couple of the years, it was by two. Like a couple years ago in Dothan, the last time I missed at second stage, I missed by a shot and had, in the first round, had a two-stroke penalty for grounding my club in a bunker. You know, that you have to call it on yourself. I mean, like, you can't convince yourself that you didn't do it, right? It's just not the way that this game is supposed to work.
Yeah.
And it's the first round, so it's not... You can obviously go back and say that's what cost me, but it's just not. But yeah, so in 2015, I went to Canadian Tour Q School and got my card there and kept it 15, 16, 17. And then I had it for last year in 18, but I split a little bit of time on Webb and, well, now Korn Ferry and McKenzie. So I didn't keep my Canadian Tour status. You have to be in the top 60 on the order of merit up there to keep your card. But I made it to finals at Q School and got on Korn Ferry, so it was a good trade.
Yeah,
that one in Dothan, was that 17?
Yeah,
I caddied in that, so I was just kind of
okay. No way.
Yeah, I caddied for Trevor Sluman.
Yeah. Okay, I know Trevor.
I was just wondering. I'm like, man, I wonder if we ever ran across each other there. And I also caddied this summer at the Lecom. Up in Beacon Peak.
Okay, I've never played that one, actually.
Yeah, you weren't in that field, so we didn't cross paths there, but I wonder if we ever got close to crossing paths down at the Dothan one.
Well, if you did, now JP told Trevor, and I've heard this from Trevor himself, that down when he caddies for him, he says, you don't have any friends this week, so.
There's no friends at Q School. Yeah.
So it wasn't like he was out there being friendly if y'all did cross paths.
Yeah, I played with last year in Mobile at second stage. I played with Scotty Scheffler in the third round. And you would have thought that we were friends for 30 years before we played that round of golf. Like, it was the most relaxed. It was the friendliest thing. I'm like, God, aren't we all kind of playing for the same thing? It's like, you know, some guys are just a little bit different. I really enjoyed playing with him, and I'm not surprised that he played as well as he did this year.
So maybe Trevor should change his mentality that I tried to pass along to him.
Sure. Well, I'm sure there's probably a lot of guys that play with me, and they're like, God, he's really not friendly. But I'm just kind of a quiet guy, not really seeking a bunch of conversation out there. I'm, you know, trying to do a job.
Yeah.
What did you think was the biggest change? So this year, obviously, you get through final stage. And you know, 23 events this year, 7 top 25s. Obviously, you kept your status for next year, but you see a lot of guys get out there and struggle. What, you know, you adjusted pretty well. You played well early. What do you think led you to do that, and why do you think some people struggle out there?
You know, I think for me the big thing is I got my feet wet on that tour a couple years and the year before, getting a couple of spots, like playing in the BMW. And then, you know, I got a spot in Utah and top 25, that got into Omaha and top 25 again. So I'd proven to myself that I could play out there. I just needed to get out there full time to see what I could do.
Yeah.
And then really got, I finished 9th in Abaco last year or this year. And so that kind of set my whole season up. I was playing on conditional status, get a spot in Abaco in top 10. And that really that got me in basically the rest of the year, except for Panama. So I went from basically having that start in Abaco to getting to almost playing a schedule after the field sizes increased to 156 and the reshuffle happened. So from there, I was able to really just kind of focus and try to continue doing what I was doing, because I know that it works.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's probably a lot to be said for having that comfort level, knowing that you can play out there, and then you have a good finish early where you're not really having to press every event feeling like, you know, you got to make something happen.
Right. And you know, that's the biggest thing too. Guys talk about it going from Korn Ferry to the PGA Tour. You know, you really, if you get in the fall series events, you know, you kind of feel like you have to play well, but you already are playing well because you got your tour card off this year. So it's kind of one of those deals, just try and go do what you do. And it's, you know, it's going to work out.
Yeah. Now, will you try to, I guess none of the PGA events are real close, but you won't try to Monday for any of those, or y'all don't have any events coming up, do you?
We don't start up again until our full schedule's not out yet, but I'm assuming that we're starting in Exuma in January. So obviously with Dorian and what Dorian did to Abaco,
yeah,
we won't be going there. You know, that's not official, but I can just imagine that just wouldn't be the right timing or anything like that. So we don't know what the schedule is going to be yet, but I know we don't start till January. So I will go do a couple of Mondays. Like I'll go do Sea Island. I would do Jackson. I actually have a wedding to go to. A fellow tour member of mine's getting married, so got to go there. I'll probably do Houston and then maybe Vegas. So I'll do a few of them.
Okay.
Make a trip out of Vegas. There you go.
Yeah, that's true.
Who's getting married?
Justin Lauer.
Oh, okay. He's a good story.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he is, you won't find many people better than him on this planet. So I'm happy that he's getting married and happy to be up there and celebrate it with him for sure. It's a good excuse to miss a PGA Tour event.
He's fun to watch. I mean, he's kind of an everyday type guy. He hits it shorter than most people out there and kind of got a quirky swing, but somehow he gets it done every year.
Yeah, I mean, he's just super solid. He's so solid. We play a lot. We played a lot of mini tour golf together. We play a lot of practice rounds together, and we've been paired. We actually got paired together in Columbus this year. So, he's super, super solid player. And you know, it's just a textbook example of there's so many ways to do it.
That must have been fun in Columbus. Like, probably had a lot more people. That's kind of a homecoming for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it was. A lot of Ohio State stuff, though, and I'm not really sure how I felt about that being a Florida guy, but no, it was fun. So it was fun. We had a good time.
Do you travel with anybody? Like, do you travel with Justin, or do you travel by yourself week to week? How's that work for you right now?
Yeah, there's probably a group of, I would say probably four or five guys that we all kind of travel together. Justin's been out there for a few years, so he's got a lot of housing set up, and I did a lot of that this year as well. But I probably split hotels with maybe three or four other guys throughout the course of the year. So we all kind of travel a little bit together.
And the schedule out there, they don't do you any favors with travel.
No.
I mean, there's no...
I hit airline status in August.
Yeah. I was about to say, there's no, you're not able to drive in between events, I don't think, probably.
Very rarely.
Yeah, there were only a few events where I had my own vehicle. So a lot of rental cars and stuff like that. But, you know, they've been doing a really solid job on the tour of trying to get it back to some semblance of the way the tour started, where you just started out west and you just drove across. You know, it was a very drivable tour in the early days. And, you know, now with different sponsors and stuff like that, different cities that we're going to and a little bit smaller markets, I guess you could say, different markets in the PGA Tour is probably a better way to put it. But like, for instance, this year our finals was Portland was the last regular season event. Then we went to Columbus, Ohio, then back to Boise and then to Evansville. Well, next year we're going Portland to Boise to Ohio to Evansville. So just little things like that kind of, you know, this year we had Salt Lake, New York, Denver.
Yeah, I remember a bunch of people trying to get to the Peak and Peak one from Salt Lake, and they were having some horror stories, and a lot of clubs weren't showing up because there was
no, yeah,
it was just a mess.
Yeah, knock on wood, Delta did a really good job. They were very, very kind to me this year. I had no bag issues whatsoever.
Yeah. So having a full year out there, what's your favorite stop?
I'm sorry?
What's your favorite stop out there after a full year?
Ooh, I love Portland. That golf course, it's Pumpkin Ridge, Witch Hollow, where Tiger won the USAM. I mean, it's such a cool place, and it's one of the best golf courses that we play. It's such a separator, and we don't get a whole lot of those on the web. Corn Ferry.
Yeah, you're going to get in trouble.
I know. I feel like we all should have a grace period until January.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't change in the middle of the year like that.
Right.
But anyway, go ahead.
Right. I feel like that golf course is a separator of a field. Like if you play well there, you can shoot 5-6 under. This year it was a little softer, so a couple more. There were some really good scores out there, but if you don't play well, you're going to shoot 5 over. And we just don't have that many golf courses like that on the Corn Ferry Tour. So I like that golf course a lot. The golf course that we play in Omaha, Indian Creek, is fantastic. It's a public golf course, and it's just awesome. It's a monster. And some of the best greens we putt all year. But sneaky this year, Savannah, down at the Landings.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good golf course.
Awesome golf course. Awesome golf course. So I enjoyed those, and I really liked Abaco for obvious reasons, but that was my birthday week too down there. So we had a good time, and it was nice. It was the first time I'd ever been to the Bahamas with Exuma and Abaco. So I really enjoyed it down there. And there's a lot of really good stops on the tour. It's hard to kind of pick one.
Now, where do you play and practice around Atlanta?
I'm at a place called Whitewater Creek down in Fayetteville. Actually, okay. Used to host the old Hooters Tour Championship.
Yeah.
For years and years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of guys have come through and played here. And it's a little shorter than, most courses that you would maybe, quote unquote, want to practice and play at. But, it's 6,800 yards and change from the back tees. And it's not a lot of drivers, so it plays a little longer. But it's a good track. And then I'll make it over to TPC Sugarloaf every now and then.
Yeah, you can just go up there whenever you want, any TPC course, right?
I can, yeah. Which is such a great benefit. It's such a great benefit.
Where does that start? Like, if you get to final stage at Q School, can you go just camp out at Sawgrass? Even if you have conditional?
So even if you have conditional. So if you are a member of any of the five, well, I guess it would be six, any PGA Tour sanctioned tour, right? So Canada, China, Latin America, Corn Ferry, Champions, or PGA Tour, you're a member of the TPC network.
Oh.
And there's only two golf courses that are restricted to Webb and PGA Tour only, and it's the stadium course in Scottsdale and it's the stadium course in Ponte Vedra. Those are the only two.
But if you have conditional Webb, you can play it.
Yes.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Like, I've taken advantage of it, obviously, here in Atlanta, and then I'll do a little wintering in Southwest Florida, and TPC Treviso Bay in Naples is fantastic, and there's hardly anybody out there practice-wise. So I seem to always have the back end of the range to myself, and it's a little tricky to get on the golf course because it's usually packed every day, but it's a great excuse to go get some work in for a few hours.
Any other PGA or Corn Ferry guys around Atlanta that you play practice with when you're home, or you just kind of keep to yourself?
There are some guys up at Sugarloaf. It's a little tricky during the year to get everybody kind of around and coordinated to get a game going. But it should be a little bit easier to kind of, we started in the spring trying to get numbers and coordinate with guys and stuff like that. Cause it just seems like we'd be showing up to Sugarloaf and see three other guys that we didn't know lived around here. So yeah. We're trying to get it coordinated up to get a couple games going up, and I wouldn't mind driving an hour to Sugarloaf to show up for a 18 or 27 hole game.
Yeah, that place is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, we can, and Sugarloaf, they just spent all that money and redid it, and I think the front nine of the tournament course is finally getting ready to open, if it isn't already, so I kind of need to go check it out.
Yeah. Speaking of playing games, I mean, when you're on the road, do you do a lot of gambling in practice rounds? Get anything exciting going for that?
In the past, we've done a little 9-point game. If we've got a three-man practice round, we'll do a little 9-point game, or we'll play a little 2-on-2 birdie game real quick. But it kind of really all depends, because you don't know who's in the pro-am or who's not. So it's kind of, yeah, I would play with you guys, but I got a 9-hole pro-am tomorrow. I'm kind of just going to take it easy, or whatever the case may be. But we do a little something light. It's nothing.
So you're not out there throwing like $5,000 a hole like Phil Mickelson.
No, I think if I did that, my banker would get really mad at me in a hurry.
Now, are you taking, I guess I should have gone back to this at the beginning, but do you take lessons from anybody? Or if you do, when did you first start taking lessons from somebody?
Sure. So I've been working with Brandon Lovelady out of Canongate 1 in Sharpsburg since 2013.
Okay.
And he and I played a lot of golf together. I was working with another coach, and I just kind of felt like I was plateauing and, you know, needed to take another step forward. And so I just kind of texted him one day. I was like, hey, you know, we've played a lot of golf together. How would you feel about getting together and chatting? And so the first question out of my mouth was, if we were going to work together, what would be the first thing that we worked on? And 3 hours later, I was still hitting balls, and we were still like talking and working, and that's just kind of how it started.
I'd say he's done a great job with, I mean, just how you've progressed over the last 6 years. You got to be pretty happy with that.
Sure. It's been super steady, and I'm kind of a self-taught player. You know, I kind of taught myself how to play, and I never had lessons growing up. You know, I guess the only lesson that I had was reading the Tiger Woods book, How I Play Golf, the old school one where he was wearing those big baggy Nike clothes and hitting all the Titleist clubs.
Right.
That was just a good book. Yeah, just all the pictures and stuff. And so that's kind of how I taught myself. And, you know, so like for example, I had no instruction on like lower body, how to use my legs or, you know, turn or anything like that. So it was a long process of teaching, you know, reteaching my lower body what it needs to be doing in the golf swing. And it's funny, there's in 2014, the Hopkins Tour event, I'm warming up doing this drill where I've got one of those impact balls in between my thighs. And I'm like warming up for a tournament round doing this, and it's just a lot of laughter. And I shot 63 the first round, and then there was no more laughter.
And they all got the same thing.
Yeah, and Brandon just said, hey, if you shoot 63 in the first round every time, you're going to see a lot more impact balls in between guys' legs and thighs on the practice tee. And I was like, oh, that's true. And, I mean, we'll try anything once.
And being on the Hopkins Tour, did you actually get paid?
Most of
well, I know that. I just know we're friends with Patton and Lee Williams, and I know a couple of those guys chased the Hopkins Tour for some money for a while. But
yeah, you know, it's just, unfortunately, I'm still not a fan of what happened, but at the same time, it was 5 years ago, so we've kind of, I think we've all moved on.
At least you got most of it.
Yeah. I want to get your opinion on one thing for that.
Yeah, go for it.
You played a lot of mini tours, and I mean, basically a journeyman, and now all these guys like Trevor goes and just camps out in China, or guys go to Latin America or Canada, and that's kind of their route. Did you like the route that you took with the mini tours better, or do you wish that maybe those tours had been more established back then, and do you think it's better now versus the mini tour way?
Ooh, man, that's a good one. I don't know. Like, I enjoyed my time on the mini tours, and I think the biggest thing is it kind of teaches you, like, you're not going to show up and play the best conditions every day. every week. And you kind of like, heck, the first tournament I won in Auburn, we were putting on punch greens. They punched the greens like 2 days before our tournament. Like, you're not going to play a Canadian Tour event where that happens. And not that you would on the Korn Ferry or the PGA Tour, certainly. But, you know, it's just like, that was just the only option that I had available to me, I guess, is the best way that I can put it. But I enjoyed it. I think I looked at it the first year I was in Canada. It almost averages out the same cost-wise.
I would think it might be even cheaper. I mean, Canada's, everything's expensive in Canada.
It is, but the good part about Canada is you're basically getting a 20% discount on everything right off the top with the exchange rate.
Yeah.
What were the what would like first place get in Canada?
I think when I was up there, it was like 30 or 36 Canadian. I mean, so which is, take 20% off of that.
Was Joel Damon playing at the same time?
He was a year earlier than I was up there. Okay. A year or two.
I mean, that's crazy. So I graduated college in 2006 and played the Hooters and the Tar Heel Tour in the Hooters mm-hmm. Tour there for a few years in like 07 and 08. If you won first place, I mean, it was $33,000. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's why a lot of guys survive there for a while on the Hooters Tour.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you could go back and look at some guys. I mean, there were a couple of guys. Who was it? Brandon Brown, like from Kentucky, that yeah. was winning 100 G's a year on the Hooters Tour.
Yeah, Ted Potter and
Teddy P, yeah.
Chad Campbell. I mean, that, mm-hmm. he was years before that, but he won like seven times one year.
Dave Schreier.
I mean, you had a bunch of guys.
I used to take lessons from Schreier.
Did you?
Yeah, down here in Peachtree City.
Yeah, that's right. He was the all-time leading money winner for a long time on the Hooters Tour.
Yeah, sure was.
He played in the third round of the 97 U.S. Open with Tiger.
That's right.
I've got such an unreal story about that, but I don't know if I'm at liberty to share it.
Oh, come on.
All right.
Yes.
Go
it's
for it.
It's not bad. It's not bad, but I have never confirmed if it's 100% true or not.
No.
But apparently he's playing with Tiger, and Tiger hits, and everybody's moving. And I guess he looks at Tiger and says, "Hey, can you tell these people to quit moving?" And I guess Tiger says to him, "Do you think they're here to see you?"
That's a true story.
You've heard it too.
Yeah, Dave's told me that.
Okay, that's what I thought. Well, if he told you that, then I don't feel bad about saying it.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
One quick thing about your mini tour days, I'll get in trouble if I don't bring this up. And I try not to talk about my job on here too much, but one of my kids, Michael Clarity, plays at Southern Hills, where he's been talking for months about you having the course record there, I think.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I just had to get that in there. He's always like, "We need to get Wade Benfield to come play with us. He's down in Atlanta." And then out of nowhere one day, Lee Caudill was like, "Hey, I could probably get Wade on your podcast," and this kid's going to be all pumped up about it.
What'd you shoot? What's the course record?
61.
That's pretty impressive. That's a tough track.
At Southern Hills and down in Hawkinsville. And if you've ever been there or played it, it's below the nat line.
Yeah.
So, like, guys are showing up on the first tee. We got dryer sheets, like, hanging out the back of the hat and the bell, just anything to keep the bugs. But what's funny is they'd had a Hooters Tour event there, and Schreier shot 61, but they were playing Live Clean and Place.
Ooh, doesn't count.
So the guy in the shop told me he was taking Schreier's card down and putting mine up, and I'm like, I don't know how he's going to feel about that. He goes, "I don't care. It was Live Clean and Place."
So yours is up there.
I think so. I haven't been back.
Well, this
I've
kid,
been back one time since, but
this kid knew about it. He's all, yeah. He's going to be all pumped up to hear that story.
I guess it still is.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who texts me and follows me a bunch, and we've played a little bit of golf where, and, he asked me, he's like, you know, we were watching the tour championship, and Rory's just in the zone. And he's like, you know, have you ever had anything close? I'm like, I don't know, but I felt like I've watched myself play five holes of golf one time. And he's like, "What do you mean?" I was like, I shot 61 in a tournament. I didn't even win, by the way. Matt Hughes beat me by two.
Roll Tide.
Yeah, Roll Tide. And I was like, I don't know. I couldn't probably tell you a yardage that I had. And I'm really good. I can remember stuff from like 6 years ago. I'm like, I don't remember a yardage. I might remember one or two clubs. I'm like, I just felt like I was watching myself play the last five holes.
That's great. Well, hey, we're kind of wrapping up some time. We don't want to take up your whole night here. We got two last questions that we try to ask everybody.
Okay.
So our podcast is called Auto Press. And it's basically like people putting gloves on, stuff like that. What's the biggest and most relevant auto press you see on Korn Ferry Tour, whether it be another player or maybe a pro-am partner?
Ooh. So, like, I don't know. Like, what do you...
like, last week we had the guy that runs the Monday Qualify on Twitter, Monday Q. He came on, and he plays a lot at a municipal course in Chicago, and he said that his favorite is a two-way chipper.
Oh, all right. So my favorite thing in the world is we have a men's group at Whitewater Creek, and one of the fellows that used to play with us maybe had the worst short game of all time. And he passed away, and we've kind of nicknamed anytime anybody puts a ball from off the green, it's a chut. So now it's kind of like a running joke, like, I'm going to chut it. And, like, dudes will putt it from 40 yards off the green. And I don't know if, like, playing so many times and just doing that, their short games aren't the best, or if what they're doing, but nobody chips. Everybody putts.
We got a few of those up at Chattahoochee and Gainesville that chut it.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. I think that just comes with age.
It might, or, you know, four or five Diet Millers on the golf course and you,
Diet Miller. You'll,
all of a sudden you can't, that into the grain 60 degree doesn't look so inviting.
Yeah.
What about like the number one thing you see, like you mentioned you were warming up with a ball between your legs. If you see a guy on the range before BMW next year, you're like, I'm going to beat this guy. What's like a telltale sign?
Oh, if he's got a poker chip in his pocket.
Yes. Okay.
That's a good
one. I've actually seen a guy in a pro tournament ask another player to move the poker chip, and it was nowhere near his line. He was just like, this isn't college anymore, man. Like, do you have a quarter?
I love it.
It was unbelievable, but. Yeah, I mean, just that drives me nuts. I use a little bit bigger. I use a Toonie from, you know, a $2 marker. So it's like a little bit bigger than a quarter, but it is nowhere near the size of a poker chip.
Yeah,
that's the thing that drives me nuts. I'm like, we're not playing a wolf game at home, man. Like,
the other question that we've asked everybody, and we've gotten a lot of various answers to this one.
And be careful, because I'm sensitive.
Would you ever let JP caddy for you in an actual event?
Probably, yeah. I mean, you know, the thing that comes back to me is, do you really want the job?
Yeah.
Like Patton Kizzire told him no, because he knew that he'd worry him out asking about it. So I mean, so don't be shy, but we're gonna mark you down as a yes.
So my caddy is actually from Dawsonville, but he had to. I gave him a week off. He had a wedding to go to, and he caddied for everybody last year, and he missed a couple things, and he ended up getting let go. He's like, I told him at the beginning of the year, I'm like, if you need a week off, just let me know so I can get somebody else and take the week off. So in Kansas City, it just lined up where I had a buddy of mine who was on the radio there and was no longer doing the sports media deal. And he had just randomly texted me. He's like, if you need a caddy for the KC Golf Classic, let me know. And I texted him back and said, you're not going to believe this, but the first question that I have for you is, do you really want the job? And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, I'd love to do it. He's like, it'll save you a little money. You know, get me out there for a week. It rained 6 inches all week. He's carrying this golf bag, and it has to be loaded down with rain gear and everything else and extra towels because it's raining the whole week and it's freezing cold. And then I tell him on Saturday, I'm like, hey, So you know how the last 2 days was kind of slow? I'm like, we're going to play in 4 hours the next 2 days or under. And he goes, uh-oh. And I mean, we were like running. And at the end of the week, he's like, dude, you really kicked my ass out here this week. I'm like, I told you, I asked you if you really wanted the job.
Yeah, people don't understand. I mean, I caddied for Brendan in the PGA Tour event in Auburn, the Barbasol, a few years ago. And it was
the one where it was on the surface of the sun.
Yeah, I mean, it was 98 degrees. I've never been. I mean, by the sixth hole, I had sweat coming off the bill of my hat. It was so hot. And that it's a
by the sixth hole
Robert Trent Jones golf course. I mean, it's I was like, I don't know why people do that.
I chose to go watch that event.
I mean, it's brutal.
But well, hey, we've got a positive answer. Hey, I've got a top 10 caddying at the BMW. So if you need somebody next May.
Deal. Yeah. So you've got a better finish at the BMW than I
do. Yeah, Dom Bazzelli. And you can look it up because he got a hole-in-one on the 17th hole and we got on Golf Channel. So.
Oh, no, at Thornblade.
Yeah,
at
Thornblade. There was a car behind the tee box, a red BMW, and he didn't get it.
Did you see that from Portland?
I saw that tournament in Portland. That made me really sick this year because it was actually sponsored by BMW and they didn't give it to him. And then Portland, they give it to the guy a week later.
Yeah. Really? So I was two groups behind Chris Nagel. I was on the 10th tee at Portland, which is a par three. And I can't remember exactly who was in the group in front of us and in between Nagel. We hear the roar and I'm like, oh, that's a hole in one roar. And then, so we're kind of looking over like, who was that? And I can't remember. I want to say it was Oppenheim, but I think I'm wrong on that. And he's like, no, that was Nagel. And then, so my first question was to Ryan Bremmer. I was like, does he get the car? And Bremmer was like, that's actually a really good question. I have no idea. Cause normally they would post that stuff. Well, I guess people made such a stink about it that the Portland BMW dealership is giving him a 2 year lease on like an X3.
Yeah.
Not the $110,000 X7 they had behind the tee, but
it was Chris Nagel.
2 year deal.
I just looked it up.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. I mean, that was literally the first thing that popped into our head. I'm like, he's going to do the Rich Beam and go sit on it and give it the whole.
That's what we're thinking. And then they came by and they're like, no, that car is for the amateur partners only, not for the pros. We're like, what?
Yeah. I can't believe nobody at the BMW has taken one of those T-markers.
Yeah, yeah. Or smashed one. I want to see somebody smash one.
This year we saw one blown out.
You did?
Yeah.
Was it an AM that did it or a pro?
It was on one of the amateur tees.
Really?
Oof. Yeah.
I may not get invited back.
I don't know
if they destroyed it with a club or they were like playing with it and like broke the door off or anything like that, but that's kind of what it was. It wasn't in a head-on collision, that's for sure.
Well, Wade, I really appreciate the time, man. Maybe if you get a couple days off and want to come up to the Orchard, feel free. Love to see you play.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. That'd be great. I really appreciate you guys having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
We'll get out with Lee Caudill.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, we'll be pulling for you.
Oh, what about
– I appreciate it, fellas.
How do we follow you?
Oh, okay. Twitter and Instagram for me is very easy. It's just @Wade_Benfield. So just first and last name with an underscore in there. And then obviously on that PGA Tour app, just hit that little star button.
Perfect. Well, hopefully we can get you some more fans.
That'd be awesome, guys. I really appreciate you guys having me.
All right. See you.
Thanks, Wade.
Have a good one.